It is a beautifully cold. I don't know if the beautiful is maybe the right adjective, but it's a beautifully cold Friday morning here. We have our second episode of the Bronx Beat. My name is Ryan Garcia, and I'm joined by the one and only Gary Phillips, beat writer for the New York Daily News. Gary, it is cold. It's early, but it is Friday, and we're ever closer to pitchers and catchers reporting. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing all right. Getting ready to go down on Tuesday. Looking forward to some sunshine and the warm Florida weather, although Brian Hoke is in Tampa already. He told me to bring a jacket. It's a little cold still down there, so it'll be better than here. It'll be better than here. But I'm excited to be doing episode 2 of the Bronx Beat. Thank you to everybody who tuned in and listened to the first one. We certainly appreciate it, and we're excited to get this thing rolling and keep it going.
Yeah, I'd like to second the thanks and appreciation for everybody who listened, whether it was on audio or on video. There won't be a delay from the audio release to the video release. That was an error on my end, but for all those who tuned in, we really appreciate it. Today's episode, we're going to be delving into the right-handed bat situation. A option, I don't know if I would put the word option in the sense, I don't know how I'd word the word option or use a different word, but an option came off the board in Miguel Andujar. And there is the NRI list that officially released, NRI standing for non-roster invites. These players are not on the 40-man roster. It's kind of a mixture of prospects and minor league signings, veteran guys who are all vying for big league spots. We'll talk about some of the interesting names there, some of the omissions as well, I guess. And then we'll take your questions as well. Let's start with the right-handed bench bats, though, Gary. The New York Yankees, as you've reported, are still in the right-handed bat market. Guys like Ty France are out there that they've shown interest in. A guy who they will not end up with is Miguel Andujar, who was a former Yankee, ended up signing a one-year deal with the Padres. Can you talk a little bit about where the Yankees stood or did not stand with Miguel Andujar?
Yeah, I know there was a lot of rumor, fan speculation, that type of stuff connecting the Yankees to Andujar. From what I was told, there weren't any conversations with him, which makes sense if you think about it. Yeah, he's a really good bat against left-handed pitchers, but he can't play more positions now than he couldn't when he was a New York Yankee. You know, he's kind of transitioned from not being a very good third baseman to being a utility man, but a utility man in the sense that he really doesn't have a home. You know, he's played some outfield. I believe he's played a little bit of first base, but he's still a poor defender. So while the bat would have been great, I think he maybe would have made a little more sense in a situation where Giancarlo Stanton gets hurt and you need to fill that DH role. So yeah, from what I was told, that was never a real consideration for the Yankees. Like you mentioned, Ty France is somebody that they've spoken to as recently as Tuesday, if not since then, I could tell you for sure. Paul Goldschmidt remains on the market. He's going to play in the World Baseball Classic for Team USA. That caught me by surprise yesterday. Randall Grichuk is still out there. Austin Slater is still out there. As fans may know at this point, the Yankees did make an offer to Slater earlier this offseason, but nothing came of that.
Yeah, and it seems with Andujar off the board, and as you mentioned, the defensive issues he brings to the table, that defense is going to be part of this conversation. You can't throw just anybody out in left field. The Yankees have tried to avoid throwing below average defenders. They tried Jason out there, and when it didn't work and Grisham broke out, Grisham ended up kind of taking his spot, and the Yankees brought back Grisham and Bellinger to keep their outfield in place. I think defense does matter to them there. And Duhar is not a third baseman. I know he can play third, but he's not a third baseman. And too limited of experience at first base to really trust him there either. At that point, you could just look at Amed Rosario throwing a first base glove and probably get a similar outcome. If you were to evaluate, based on the options out there, is there a guy you would get? Would you just kind of sit out the bench market? Is there anybody that's like enticing enough for you to go, yep, the Yankees should go get that guy?
I think it depends on cost, because you have to keep in mind with where the Yankees are at with the luxury tax, like they're getting, you know, there's going to be a huge tax implication for every dollar that they spend, right? So are you bringing in a $5-6 million bench bat? Is somebody like Paul Goldschmidt, who made $12.5 million last year, willing to take significantly less to do that? I'm not sure. At this point, it feels like this is more of an exploration of their options opposed to something like that they just need to go get done right now. You know, they can let things play out a little bit, see who remains on the market in spring training, see who becomes available, see maybe who gets cut or part of a roster crunch on another team as the spring goes on. That seems at this point like maybe it would be more their approach. Otherwise, you would think they might have something done by now. Like you mentioned, they do have Rosario. It makes a bit of sense to see what he can do at first base. You know, trot him out there a couple times, see how he looks early on in spring training. And, you know, maybe that changes their evaluation of just how much do they need somebody who's capable of playing first. You know, we could also use somebody, a right-handed hitter who's capable of playing the outfield. Right now, Jason Dominguez is penciled in as your fourth outfielder, and he's kind of an imperfect fit for that role as a switch hitter who's weak from the right side and a left fielder, you know, a guy who can only play left, doesn't play it particularly well. So there's a little bit of a lack of versatility there with Dominguez in that spot. Doesn't mean they can address the right-handed issue by getting a first baseman, getting, you know, if they were to find one, a catcher, although they've missed some options in that market earlier this offseason. So I think it's more that they would like to have one, but are they jumping at any of these options? Clearly not so far.
Yeah, and it's also, I think, a situation where, as you mentioned with Paul Goldschmidt, there has to be a low enough dollar where Goldschmidt just doesn't want to play for the Yankees, right? I mean, a guy who's played as much baseball as he had, who has accomplished as much as he's had, there's not really a reason to take, what, 1 year, $1 million to play 30 games, 40 games for the Yankees or have a role where you should, if everything goes right, you're playing about 30 to 40 games. That kind of feels a little bit weird. Maybe for Ty France, that's a little bit more understandable because he signed for $1 million last year and didn't have a great offensive season. I don't know. I think the bench bat market, there are teams that can offer more playing time. There are teams that, if you offer more playing time, will likely offer more money with that playing time. I just wonder who can actually shake free of this group of right-handed bats.
Right, and you mentioned the playing time and the money. You know, the Yankees were interested in Harrison Bader and Austin Hayes earlier this offseason, at least they checked in with them, but those guys signed for roles and paychecks that were more than would have made sense for the Yankees. Now, they've said that Ben Rice is going to play against lefties this year, so how many at-bats are there for somebody like Paul Goldschmidt? I'm not sure. And how many at-bats is Paul Goldschmidt willing to cut from what he did last year? You know, what type of paycheck is he willing to take after making $12.5 million last year? Now, I'm sure being where he's at in his career, he would like to win a World Series or a chance to win a World Series. Maybe that entices him. You know, maybe he plays in the World Baseball Classic and makes a decision at that point and sees how he's feeling. Maybe Team USA wins it all and he says, you know, that's a nice bow on my career. I don't know. But I think with guys like him, Randall Grichuk, Austin Slater, Ty France, like there is a matter of there's a playing time component to it. You know, those guys, aside from Goldschmidt, probably aren't going to command nearly as much money as Goldschmidt might be looking for, but they might be looking for more playing time.
Yeah, and again, it's a matter of, one, what are you even getting from the player? How much leash can you give these kinds of players? If, let's say, Paul Goldschmidt has a 150 on base percentage and a 300 slugging percentage through May, do you keep playing him? Do you cut him? I think these are all things that both the player and the team have to consider. It is far easier for Austin Hayes, for example, not only to just start in Chicago, but if he gets off to a bad start, it's not like he's going to start playing once every 6 days. He's still going to play pretty frequently because, for lack of better terms, the White Sox suck. So there's more upside for them playing the player, whereas for the Yankees, like if Hayes got off to a bad start, they'll just play Dominguez more, even if Dominguez isn't necessarily a perfect fourth outfield fit, as you mentioned. Do you think I'm off base on that?
No, not really. And I would also just add that a guy like Hayes, you know, maybe he becomes this year's Rosario or this year's Slater if the White Sox are not performing well and the Yankees once again address this at the deadline. It's not that I don't think they're ignoring this need or this want right now. I'm not sure any of these guys are jumping off the page at this point.
Yeah, and again, it takes two to tango, right? You can't just say, oh, well, I think this player is a platoon bat, therefore he should sign as a platoon bat. If another team like the Diamondbacks were in on Ty France, if they signed him, they were going to give him a starting job. I'm sure if I'm Ty France, I would rather sign in Arizona than sign with the Yankees. That's just That's not even a preference of team or location. That just comes down to how many play appearances I'm going to get. How much money can I make from playing for this team? There's more money to be made as a starter than there is as a short side platoon first baseman. It's not really close, and I do think that's going to play a big role in where some of these guys end up. Is there anybody that's we're not thinking about that could be a right-handed bat option, or is that really the extent of this market at this point?
I don't think so. I know Tommy Pham is still out there, but I haven't heard anything on him in the Yankees and would be surprised, frankly, if they went after him. It's not a great market. I think Marte is still out there, right? Like, there's not a lot of exciting options left for, especially when you consider, like, what the Yankees want to pay and how much they want to play, you know, the person who's going to fill this role.
Yeah, and I think, again, as we get through spring training, there's a chance somebody shakes free, a guy gets cut, and we see the Yankees pick him up. This is a very specific low plate appearance role, which is play against lefties, which I think the number is about 22-23% of league plate appearances come against lefties. So you're acquiring somebody who, if you do the math, is going to get, if you give like a starter 600 plate appearances, you're getting like, man, you're not even getting 200 plate appearances. You're probably getting 150 if all goes well in that kind of role. And with Jason still here, it's not like that player is going to suddenly play against righties. If Stanton were to go down, you would just play Dominguez in that situation. So it's not even like there's room for that guy to start in this scenario. Is there any final thoughts you have on that bench situation?
Not really. I know it's been a topic for a couple weeks now at this point, and every time I go over the names, I'm kind of just like, eh, okay. Like, if they got one of those guys, it'd be good depth and a useful thing to have, but also I'm not sure any of those guys are moving the needle.
I don't know, man. Ty France is probably, I mean, he has a gold glove. How many gold gloves does Ben Rice have? You know, like I personally, that matters, right? I'm joking. I also don't think these guys are particularly good. I think it's just, for me, I've always subscribed to the theory of if you're going to spend $2 million on a bench bat or just not spend the $2 million, sure, I'll take the bench bat, right? I think that's better than just pocketing it unless that costs you at the deadline. I don't really know. If the opportunity cost is at this point likely potentially a reliever or maybe making an addition at the deadline you would otherwise not make if you had that money, or you would be able to make if you had that money. We are at the point with a payroll where they've never spent this much money before. There's a 110% tax. Every single dollar should make you question what they can do, what they could have done with that money otherwise, I think, at this point.
Keep in mind also that teams like to set some money aside, you know, particularly the Yankees operate this way, because you do incur new in-season costs from new additions, the trade deadline, and things like that. So whatever the Yankees are at now, payroll-wise, the expectation, at least based on past precedent, would be that they're saving a little money to add to the roster should they need to.
Yeah, again, we'll kind of see how this bench situation plays out, but I agree. I think that there's got to be some funds they're putting aside, especially after last year they had acquired McMahon's contract. I know it wasn't the full $16 million added to your payroll, but there's, I think it was $7 million based on how much time there's left for the season. Still, it's a pretty significant chunk of money to the Yankees when you're over that threshold. 110% tax, that's over $14 million in additional money that you're paying for that season, for that roster, and then that doesn't even add on any other players you add. So we'll see how they end up navigating that. Changing gears a little bit here, we're going more spring training focused because it's right around the corner. Pitchers and catchers are reporting soon. Gary's getting ready for that warm weather, or I guess not that warm weather in Tampa right now. The Yankees have dropped their non-roster invites, and in this list includes some pretty notable prospects: Ben Hess, Carlos LaGrange. We kind of talked about whether Hess would or would not get a spring training invite to, or a non-roster invite. There's George Lombard Jr. here as well. There are some veteran guys who are going to vie for maybe bench spots or bullpen spots. Gary, you did an article on some of the NRIs. Who are some guys that stick out to this list, and why will you be watching them this spring?
Yeah, just a really quick breakdown. Nothing special, but we talked about LaGrange and Hess last time on the show. Those are guys I'll definitely be watching. We kind of covered why, just them being top pitching prospects in the Yankee system. LaGrange throws 100 miles an hour, so that's always fun to see, especially when pitchers first start facing hitters, and the pitchers are usually always a little bit of ahead of the hitters in spring training. So, you know, there'll probably be moments where LaGrange is blowing it by somebody like a Jazz Chisholm Jr. or an Aaron Judge or whatever, and that's a cool moment for him, right? It's cool to watch. It's fun to watch. Other than that, Yankees got a couple other, you know, prospects in camp, Lombard being one of them. Curious to see what he looks like, if he's made any adjustments after struggling a bit offensively at Double A last year. Some veterans who will be there include Paul DeJong. You know, maybe he's tries to factor into the right-handed bat conversation. I'm not sure. Zach Short's another veteran guy. Seth Brown will be there. And then they got a couple of arms that I'm intrigued by, one of them being Dylan Coleman, who used to pitch for the Royals, has had some issues with his velocity the last couple of years, but after doing some off-season training in Rhode Island, is now back up to 100 miles an hour. So he's a guy I'm intrigued by.
I think one of the guys I'm intrigued by, and I agree on all the pitching side, all the pitching guys, especially Coleman, because he's a veteran guy. You don't have to he might have an opt-out in his contract. You know, a lot of these veteran guys sign these minor league deals, and it's like, hey, if by X date I'm not on the roster, I can elect for free agency. That'll give them a little more favor over perhaps, I mean, there's not even like a prospect who's on the cusp of being a bullpen guy. Elmer's probably the closest to being a big leaguer in their prospect pool, but he's a starter, and I don't think they're going to add him to the bullpen on opening day. I could be wrong on that. I think Coleman has a really good shot of competing for a spot in a bullpen that just doesn't have a lot of certainty right now, which we've highlighted before. One of the guys I'm interested in looking at is Marco Luciano, because he hits lefties and has hit lefties in both his minor league career and his very brief major league career. I think there's at least some intrigue here to a guy who can hit lefties when we have this conversation about bench bats. I don't think he's a good baseball player, but if you're right-handed and you can maybe hit lefties, there's something there. I think, I mean, Pablo Reyes made last year's team with Oswald Peraza, so I wouldn't rule this out, would I?
Yeah, no, I mean, right now, if you look at the Yankees bench, Rosario is the only right-handed hitter that they have. Dominguez is a switch hitter, and Cabrera is a switch hitter, but they're not great from the right side. Oscar is a lefty, so this idea that somebody like Luciano or DeJong could push for, you know, at least compete for a spot, I mean, I don't think it's crazy. Would I put my money on it? No, not necessarily. Like, you know, Dominguez and Cabrera do have the advantage of experience, but they've also got, you know, options. Cabrera in particular has an option. He's coming off a gruesome injury, so we don't know what he looks like right now. You know, right now he would project to be the preferred backup shortstop option, but what if his mobility is a little bit limited and he needs some time to shake off the rust? You know, these are all things that'll play out in spring training and things to keep an eye on. Now, there's not a lot of uncertainty with this roster right now outside of the bullpen, but little things like that to just keep an eye on in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and small injuries, setbacks. I mean, you kind of have the ticking time bomb of Giancarlo Stanton, who it feels like it's a matter of when, not if, he will have an IL stint. And I've said this before, you have to kind of plan for at least a month without Stanton, if not more, throughout your regular season. And that is going to create, I mean, last year, Ben Rice was a guy who was like, all right, I don't know if he's going to be a bench bat. Don't know if he's going to make the team out of camp. And then it comes out that Stanton has a double elbow injury, and he's basically the clear favorite to win the DH spot, because it was what, him and Dom Smith as the competition there. Yeah, I was not shocked when Rice won that. I just think the pitching side happens to just be more interesting. And I think it's the case kind of every year, because you don't need, not that you don't need a large sample size to know what makes for a good or doesn't make for a good pitcher, but we have more information on what makes for a good pitch individually, or what makes for a good fastball, a slider, a curveball. And that information doesn't take in-game regular season setting to figure out, or even multiple games to figure out. You can figure out if a guy's got a good fastball really in one bullpen, versus with hitters, very hard to figure out whether they can make contact in zone in games. That, I think it's just way more complex for that, versus again with Dylan Coleman. He throws 100. That's a level of intrigue by just throwing 100.
Yeah, and I would also just add, like, as fans are watching spring training and somebody's having a really good spring or a really bad spring, like, don't get caught up in spring training stats. You know, sometimes these guys are, you know, a younger hitter or a roster bubble guy is consistently facing double A or triple A pitching, which is something Baseball Reference keeps track of. And it's like, okay, yeah, the numbers look nice, but it's not really indicative of anything or telling you anything about how he might do in a major league game. For pitchers, like Ryan said, guys have bullpens where they are being tracked, every single metric, every single movement. The Yankees know their biomechanics. They know their pitch shapes, metrics, spin, all this stuff. Like, that is going to be just as much a part of the conversation, if not more, regarding whether a guy is going to make a team or is capable of pitching in the big leagues, things like that.
Yeah, to kind of give you a couple of statistical examples for those at home, the Yankees league leaders in qualified OPS in spring training, Pablo Reyes had a higher OPS than Ben Rice. Jazz Chisholm slash 208, 309, 438. That was worse than Ismael Munguia. Paul Goldschmidt outhit Aaron Judge in spring training. I mean, there's Aaron Judge, kind of like a notorious bad spring training hitter at this point. These things don't matter. Like, dude, I actually didn't know this. This is a really good one, actually. Andrew Velasquez had a better strikeout rate and a better OPS than Aaron Judge did.
And like, don't get me wrong. Sometimes the guy has a great spring and earns his way onto a team. I mean, we saw that with Luis Gil, right? But yes. Luis Gil was consistently facing major league lineups and major league hitters. So like, those are things to pay attention to and things to factor in. It can't just be like, oh, a guy's got a 150 ERA this spring. He should be on the team.
Yes, and again, as we talk about with underlying numbers, which even then, even if a guy's got a good FIP in spring training, that can be just a blip in the radar, not really predictive. A lot of these guys are shaking off rust. Not all these guys are going into camp to try and win games, if that makes sense. Like, Carlos Rodon made one start to start spring training, spent most of it in the backfield working on that sinker, and then came back at the end and made it a start. But a lot of these guys are working on things and trying to especially guys who are already on the team and know they're going to be on the team. It's just about trying to work on things, getting yourself right. Everyone goes into spring training with different things they need to do. Some guys are coming in to win a job. And in that situation, yeah, you want to win every single at bat and you want to pick up as many hits as possible and make every great base running play you can. But for other guys, it's like for Jazz, let's say, his second base job's not in question. I don't think he's going to show up to camp going, I have to hit 400 or I have to do this. It's probably like, I just have to make sure my swing feels right, I feel right, and I stay healthy.
Yeah, that's a great point as well. I mean, Cam Schlittler, we know, is going to be working on a new pitch this spring, whether it's a changeup or a splitter. Don't freak out if Schlittler has a 7 ERA after his first two starts, but he's thrown that pitch a bunch. You know, he's working on something. It doesn't mean he's going to be a bust or he was overhyped last year or anything like that. Guys try new pitches. They tinker with their mechanics. They're trying to get into a rhythm. Some guys are at different points in their throwing programs compared to others. Like, all these are things to keep in mind. And I would just say, whether a guy's doing really well or really poorly, like, try to keep a level head about it. Don't get too excited one way or the other.
Yeah, it's kind of like the in-game lives where you see like the videos get posted of guys on the Yankees like teeing off of Gerrit Cole or some AAA guy strikes at Aaron Judge, and it's like, that's great, that's awesome, but that doesn't mean anything. Like, these things don't matter. Gerrit Cole's not going in there going, man, if I don't get this guy out, I'm not going to make the team. It's like, I'm just throwing like all fastballs today. I got to figure out how I got to get that location right or however my feel right. Again, it's spring training is a different beast for everybody, depending on where you're at in your career and where you're at on this roster. I don't know if there's any other like notes from the NRIs that I wanted to look at. I guess it's just nice to potentially get some like StatCast data on prospects, because for like Heston LaGrange, Hess specifically never pitched in single A and has not reached triple A, so we have no data on him that's publicly available. For LaGrange, there's a small snippet in single A, but this was before he broke out, so it's outdated information. So it's going to be nice to get information. I always love getting info, and I hate when they play like in Baltimore's spring training field without any track man, because I'm like, dude, you're putting your top prospect out there and I have no idea what his stuff looks like. I think it'll be good to just get information. This is what it really is for me, information gathering.
I always like seeing who from the organization is watching. And this is particularly the case when for pitchers, a couple years ago, There was a day where Chase Hampton and Will Warren were scheduled to throw back-to-back. This was in 24, I guess. And you saw a lot of people from the Yankees front office out there in the dugout, watching, paying close attention. It wasn't just, you know, Boone and Matt Blake behind the L screen on the mound. Like, there was a turnout, and that felt, you know, at the time, like, it's like, oh, okay, like, they're paying close attention to these guys. We should be paying close attention to these guys. So and that doesn't necessarily mean a guy's going to make a team as much as it means, like, okay, there's a lot of organizational intrigue in a player, but I would assume the first time Carlos LaGrange is throwing live BP, like, there will be a nice size turnout from Yankees coaches and executives.
And again, that guy just throws so hard. I just finished doing my top 30 write-ups, and I'm working on how that exactly is going to roll out, because I'm rolling them out a little bit differently this year. And getting to look at some of the velo data that is out there on LaGrange, it's ridiculous. Like, the fastball velocity is awesome. I mean, and his changeup's really good, too. He throws, like, a 91, 92-mile-per-hour changeup. I'm going to be really excited to watch LaGrange. And Hess is, you know, he's not as good as LaGrange, in my opinion, as a prospect. But I think a lot of that gets boiled into, okay, that he's not good at all. And Ben Hess needs to be talked about more. And I'm sure we'll get some more conversations about him as spring goes on, as we get closer to the start of the season. Any final thoughts you have on the NRIs before we move on to our mailbag?
No, I don't think so. I know one person asked if I was surprised that Nick Torres was not on there. Truthfully, it didn't even occur to me right away until I saw the question. For those that don't know, Nick Torres was the Mexican League MVP in 2025. The Yankees signed him to a minor league deal. Plays first, can play some corner outfield, is a right-handed bat. So I guess maybe I am a little surprised that he's not there, but it doesn't mean you won't see him in spring. You know, players from the minor league side, the complex side, come over to big league camp all the time for at-bats, throw innings. Sometimes they just need more bodies.
Yeah, to kind of give you guys an example, I last night went live and the NRIs dropped then, and I was like, oh, wow, Kilby isn't on here. Isn't that weird? Because Lombard took an at-bat in his first drafted year. And then I checked, and he wasn't an NRI. He just got an at-bat in one of those spring games. He had a home run, I think, to the opposite field in that at-bat. But these things just happen. Like,
last year was Lombard's, like, first official time being invited to camp. I mean, Hess has thrown at George M. Steinbrenner Field in live BP previously. I forget if that had to have been last year. Like, yes. He's done that before. Guys come over from the minor league side all the time. Guys who are not in big league camp play in Grapefruit League games. The NRI list is more just like, okay, they're going to get more opportunities. They're going to get more looks. These are guys that the organization is paying relatively more attention to.
Yeah. And again, it's you're going to see some guys you have no idea. You'll see numbers that you're like, who is that guy? And it's some player who just got drafted and is going to get assigned to high A or single A Tampa, and that's why they're there. They're just there for innings or reps, as you mentioned, and just to have depth. There are guys who legitimately just exist on the spring training roster for that day to come in if a reliever or starter cannot get out of an inning, or if they reach their pitch count before an inning concludes, and they are just there to get that one out and then not pitch for the rest of the day. So spring training, they have the rule now where you can come out of a game and then reinsert in the game for pitchers if I think, right, you can, like, Garrett Cole got knocked out of an inning once and then came back in later. I think that's a thing now, right?
Yeah, there's rules like that, and, you know, getting the games over a little quicker if they get out of control, which are always nice. I think my first year, these rules were not in place, and we were in Lakeland, and where the Tigers play, and there you go get Boone post-game, like, underneath the bleachers in the stands. So we go down before the game ends and we kind of just hang by a fence in this, like, tunnel area, and all of a sudden it became like a 15 run game, like, just in the entire span of time that we were sitting there waiting for him. So we were all just like, can we get this over? Like, this doesn't matter. Like, let's get out of here. So I guess things like that are less prone to happening now.
Yeah, well, again, I don't I don't think there's a need for the for 9-inning, 15-run spring training games. You can just, you know, you can just call them. You know, like, I don't think it's not good for the arms, not good for anybody. There's not a single person, I think, who wants at that point. There aren't even, like, big leaguers playing in the late innings of these early spring games anyways. It just, it does not matter enough. And I guess that's the nice little asterisk that we have to give out every year, which is, guys, spring training doesn't matter. All these rules are not rules that you would put into place if you were trying to actually get information out of spring training OPS or ERA.
Very, very rarely will you see me reference what happens in a spring training game or, like, even the score or anything like that. Like, that's not, I'm not doing game stories in spring training, thankfully.
Yeah, totally fair. I do pay attention to things like velocity and things like that, but that's because you would pay attention to them in a bullpen. Like, you would pay attention to that in a live. If somebody started popping 98 and they sit 92, yeah, that would matter, but not because it's spring training.
If somebody's competing for a job and we're getting towards the end of spring training, like, okay, then it's relevant, I guess, what you did in the game today. Like, last year, toward the end of spring training, you know, we were writing a lot about, you know, we were writing Carlos Carrasco's stat line and Will Warren's stat line. I won't be doing that in February.
Makes total sense. I think it's a good point for us to go on into our mailbag. We want to thank everybody who submitted questions. As we mentioned earlier in the week, we would be using questions from the tweets or the posts used that we didn't include in our first episode, to be fair to everybody, because we didn't, you know, we're not listing off 20 questions, but we do appreciate all the submissions. If yours didn't get featured, there's a good chance it's just because we're answering your question from somebody else who just worded it in a different way. So we do appreciate all the questions. We'll start with this first question from CEO_0914. And it's, do you think Bellinger takes first base at bats versus left-handed pitching and they place somebody else in the outfielder or in the outfield instead? He has a follow-up that, do you think they'll end up getting a right-handed outfielder to do that? We did talk about the bench a little bit, but Gary, do you think Belly gets reps at first base potentially?
I think potentially. Like, again, maybe this depends on whether they do get another right-handed hitter. Maybe it depends on how Rosario looks at first base. I will say that if the Yankees are facing a lefty, like, it might make more sense to have Trent Grisham come out of the lineup and you slot Bellinger over to center. But then you've got Dominguez playing left field and hitting from the right side. So, like, again, it's kind of like an imperfect fit with these backup pieces at the moment. Maybe the outlook on that changes in spring, depending on, you know, how guys improve. You know, I'm thinking, again, Dominguez in left field defensively and from the right side of the plate, how Rosario looks at first base. I certainly think it's possible, but, like, how much or how logical it would be is to be determined.
Yeah, I think TBD is kind of the best way to look at the bench or there any of their platoon situations right now, because, as you mentioned, there are guys who could shake free in spring training. There are guys who can impress or not impress in spring training. And to be completely frank and to be ominous a little bit, there could be guys who get hurt, and that will always change the equation. There are guys playing in the World Baseball Classic. They have Austin Wells as a catcher going. I think they have 11 players or something in that range. They have a good amount of representation in this WBC. Look, there's just a good amount of injury risk. Yes, you did tweet it.
I tweeted a long list. Let me see. Let me do a real quick count here. Let's see. Players we've got for the DR, Camilo Duvall, Austin Wells, Ahmed Rosario. For Great Britain, the only major league guy you got to worry about is Jazz Chisholm Jr. Jose Caballero is playing for Panama. Fernando Cruz and Elmer Rodriguez are pitching for Puerto Rico. And then you've got David Bednar and Aaron Judge for Team USA.
Yeah, so there's a lot of representation, and there's a lot of coaching representation. I mean, the list of people you have as coaches here is insane. You have Osmus, Swanson. I didn't know Raul Dominguez was going to be in this. That's cool for him. I know he just got promoted to AAA as a defensive coach.
Yeah, him and Gil Velasquez were, I don't know if they were surprise additions. They were surprises to me when the rosters got announced yesterday. They've got a scout, which I thought was really cool. Dennis Boucher, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, or Boucher. He's going to be the bullpen coach for Canada. And then a whole bunch of former Yankees are either playing or coaching. Dylan Lawson's going to be with Great Britain. I saw Chin-Ming Wong is going to be coaching for the Chinese Taipei, which I thought was really cool. When I saw that roster, I was like, oh, I hope his name is on here. And I was pleasantly surprised that it was.
Yeah, dude. I mean, as a kid, like I really loved Changming Wong, man. I really did. I'm so upset that incident in Houston occurred. I will never get over that. Probably. I loved him, and I think one of the cool ones too in this, and I know this is not really a deep pull, but I think it's cool is Augustin Ramirez is gonna catch for DR because they had issues with insurance with Yainer Diaz, and he had essentially spent all winter begging to play on the roster, and now he has a spot. Former Yankee prospect was traded for Jazz, who's in the World Baseball Classic as well, as you mentioned. I'm excited for the Gus Bust and Austin Wells, former Yankee farmhands. What could have been a catching battery in or a catching tandem for the Yankees ends up being one for DR. I'm excited. Those are two of my favorite prospects I covered when they were coming up in the system, and now they're on the same team. I'm pumped, man.
Yeah, a few other former Yankees that fans might be excited to see in the World Baseball Classic. Let's see, we got Jameson Taillon, Gio Urshela, Wandy Peralta, Luis Severino. They might not be so excited to see Juan Soto. Tommy Kahnle. Tommy Kahnle. Right, yeah. You know, Tommy Kahnle is going to pitch for Israel. Francisco Cervelli and Jorge Posada are managing and coaching with Italy, which also has Adam Ottavino and Dave Righetti. Didi Gregorius is playing for the Netherlands. Like we mentioned, Paul Goldschmidt will be with USA. Clay Holmes is going to be with USA. Also, Sean Casey, Matt Holliday, and Brian McCann are with Team USA. They're coaching. And then Gleyber Torres is playing as well.
And isn't Didi playing too? Like, that's...
Didi's on the playing roster.
Yeah, I was... At first when I saw him, I was like, oh, as a coach. No, he's playing, which... Good for him, man. I didn't know he's 35. Like, I thought he was a little bit older than that. It's a little crazy. I mean, geez, I know, again, I understand that's not young in baseball years, but that's a lot younger than I thought he was. I was like, yeah, he's got to be 40, 41 at this point, no?
He was in Yankees camp last year, mostly just hanging out and taking pictures, but he looked like he was in good shape.
Yeah, I did. I remember he was doing photography. Former Yankee legend Jemai Jones, who is now an awesome bench bat for the Tigers, and John Birdie, former first baseman on a Yankee team that went and won the pennant, which is an incredible fun fact that John Birdie can say he was he legitimately played games on a pennant winning baseball team at first base, a position he did not play before in the big leagues, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Did he even play any first base last year?
For the Cubs, I'm not sure. I am not sure at all.
Like, was that postseason his only first base
that experience? Yes. In his major league career, yes. In his minor league career, also yes. He has never played first base since.
Still has not done it in a regular season game. Amazing.
Or in a minor league game. So has never done it as a pro, which... What a note, man. That's incredible. That's awesome. We'll move on to the next question here. I do think this is kind of tied to what you talked about with Dominguez and the outfield and kind of where, you know, we get some surprise contributions. And this is from at GodsMac9494. Thank you for the question. Every year, the Yankees seem to have surprise contributors to the bullpen. No, excuse me. This is a different question. I'll get to that later. Thinking of guys who took a step back or didn't take that step forward last year, are there any adjustments or changes that we know about that should excite fans, specifically Volpe, Wells, and Dominguez in MLB? But if also any MILB guys come to mind. This is from at Ketson1171. Gary, anybody who took a step back or didn't really have the year you hoped for or the Yankees hoped for that could end up making some adjustments and changes?
I mean, I know they expected more out of Austin Wells last year offensively. Aaron Boone's been very open about that and forward about that. I think a big problem with him last year was swing decisions and pitch recognition. He really, really struggled with breaking balls, especially early in the count. You know, the pitchers were just attacking him with those and putting him behind right away. So Yankees have to hope that improves. I don't think it's a matter of talent with him or even necessarily mechanics. You know, maybe he does make a mechanical tweak to help with that pitch recognition, but that would be something to keep an eye on. I believe it was Aaron Boone made a brief mention of McMahon narrowing his stance up a little bit this offseason, so we'll see if that does anything for him. Volpe isn't swinging yet, so nothing there. Dominguez played some winter ball, but it was a small sample, so nothing to really make note of there. I haven't heard of any adjustments or anything he made while he was doing that. Might be a better question, you know, a couple weeks from now once we've had a chance to see guys hitting some spring training games.
Yeah, and I think for Wells specifically, the not that it's low-hanging fruit, because I think that kind of dumbs down how hard it is to hit in the big leagues, but he did talk about on Hot Stove that he's working on his plate discipline, and I think we both agree the walks, the decrease in walk rate, probably the most concerning regression for him from last year, where it was, instead of being a guy who's patient and takes his walks and can get on base, he was chasing out a lot of pitches out of zone. If he can just not do that this year, I think he should be in a good spot for offense. Also, the bar for a catcher offensively, or the amount of weight that being a good hitting catcher carries when you're a really good defender, is a little bit different. You don't have to be an 800 OPS guy if you're a really good defender at catcher. You might not even have to be a 750 OPS guy to be a really good catcher if you play good defense the way that Wells does. Any other notes maybe on the pitching side that you could think of?
Not really. Like I said, Schlittler's going to be working on a new pitch this spring, something to help him against lefties. I know Cade Winquist talked to Matt Blake about possibly adding, I want to say, a sinker off the top of my head. I'm sure there'll be a couple other guys with new pitches or things they're experimenting with in spring.
Yeah, I'm going to give you guys a little insight here. I'm buying a radar gun, and I'm working on my velo. We're gonna radar and spring training myself, Sam, and Alex. So I'm going to get the arm hot and see where I top out at. So that's the only other insight I can provide. We'll move on to the bullpen question that I kind of spoiled a little bit, and I apologize to our viewers for spoiling it. Every year, the Yankees seem to have surprise contributions to the bullpen, and they did not get that in 2025. Who, in your opinion, has the best chance to be that guy?
I think it's a little early to say. Like I said before, Dylan Coleman's a guy that I'm going to be interested in watching in camp. I know they are intrigued by him. I know they've had interest in him for a little bit and were able to get him on a minor league deal, an NRI deal. Guy's throwing 100. I believe he added a couple pitches as well. One's a cutter. I want to say the other's a sinker off the top of my head. I talked to his private pitching coach yesterday for a little while, and he was speaking very matter-of-factly that he's going to be an impact arm for the Yankees. Take that with a grain of salt. Obviously, he's working with the guy. He wants to see him succeed. But I do know the Yankees have been intrigued by him and signed him because they like what they saw in some offseason bullpens.
Yeah, and the Yankees last year finished with the second slowest four-seam fastball velocity among major league bullpens. So there is a fit there from the stylistic aspect of things, where Coleman's a hard thrower. They don't have a ton of hard throwers in their bullpen. Again, I think there's some value there. I would put my pick as, and I mean, Cade Winquist kind of feels like an obvious one for me. I don't know if that's really going too deep into the bag here, but the gap between his sitting velocity and his max velocity is pretty wide, and I think as a reliever, he will perform well there. Also, the changeup was like surprisingly better than I thought it was when I was looking through his minor league data. He was a big reverse splits guy. His OPS against righties was 720-ish. His OPS against lefties was under 600, which I found fascinating considering he's a guy who seems to be able to spin the ball well away from righties. So I found that interesting. I just think it's a good organizational fit. And we'll see how he performs. He also kind of has to. He's one of those guys where his spring training results might matter a little bit more, because it's make the major league team or go back to the minor leagues in St. Louis, which I mean, there's a pretty obvious what you'd rather have, which is be a big leaguer on the Yankees versus a minor leaguer in St. Louis. So I'll be interested to watch that. We've got one final question from John.
I was just going to say, to further the bullpen point, I mean, the way the Yankees bullpen options are presently constructed, they're going to have maybe two or three guys that are, we talked about this last time, right? Like, they're collecting lottery tickets. So Coleman's a guy to keep an eye on. Cade Winquist is a guy to keep an eye on. Aaron Boone, unprompted, said at the winter meetings he expects a lot from Brent Hedrick. There's Jake Bird. There's Angel Chavilla. Like, all of these guys would essentially be success stories if they end up having a huge impact on the Yankees in 2026. Paul Blackburn is a guy that they think could follow a Luke Weaver type trajectory. I mean, that's easier said than done, right? But he got a $2 million deal, so he'll probably have an inside track at landing a bullpen spot. All of these guys are essentially, you know, darts that they're kind of just throwing at the board. And if any of them have a big impact on the team, then that's I think, what the question is asking, right? Like, these surprise contributions. Maybe it's not such a surprise because there's so many of them, but they're counting on somebody to pan out.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, they're going to really need it, first and foremost. And secondly, I mean, unless there's an addition on the way, I mean, this is that's the way they want to build their bullpen. And, you know, they'll whether it works or not remains to be seen. That's, I think, the that'll be really fun to watch. Chavi has an 80 grade name, which is I really respect the name game. Angel Chavi.
I've honestly been struggling with it. I think when the day of the trade, when we got Cashman on the Zoom, I made sure that I had his, you know, phonetic pronunciation up on Baseball Reference and read straight from there. Just try to do my best to not mess it up, and I still think I failed.
What I did was I just repeated the name from the official pronunciation guide like 10 times, and then I got it. It just clicked. I don't know what it is. It just clicked. I'm not good with pronunciations. I used to pronounce Nolan Arenado's name Arenado for so long, and I had to break that. It took a while. I don't know why I thought it was Arenado. I pronounced a lot of names wrong over my time here at Fireside Yankees, and it's a pretty rough track record. But Chavi's one that I got fairly easily. I don't know why. Maybe it's a kind of a Latin name, so maybe that was just like more familiar to me. I don't know. I really don't. But I love the name. I think it's an 80 grade name.
Not a pronunciation thing, but, you know, us Yankees writers just escaped having to worry about confusing Oswald and Oswaldo, and now we've got an Oswaldo and as Osvaldo, so I'm sure I'll botch that once or twice in something I write this spring.
Big Beto, Osvaldo Beto, who they did claim off waivers and has been just on that waiver wire, man. Nobody's willing to just let the dude elect for free agency. I think it's what? The Marlins, Rays, Angels, and Yankees in the span of a few months, correct?
I think Braves are on there too.
Oh my God, yeah, that guy's poor travel schedule, man. I mean, I don't even know what you do. You just kind of like wait and go, wherever I'm at right now, I'm staying right now until I figure this thing out. That's brutal for the waiver wire. Brutal. Any final thoughts on any bullpen guys that we haven't mentioned yet?
No, I think we've covered them pretty well.
Yeah, we even covered our top name guys, which, again, I'm rocking with Angel Chavi, man. That's just a name and a half. We have our final question from John Brophy, who does prospect work. You guys should check that out. And he has two questions. He has a sleeper non-roster invite and a favorite place to eat, one fancy, one non-fancy in Tampa. Gary, this is your area of expertise in both regards here.
I think we've covered the sleeper non-rosters, right? I'm going to just reiterate, Coleman's a guy that I'm interested in seeing this spring. Places to eat, on the other hand. So for non-fancy, I'm going to say Gringo's. It's a Cuban cafe. Great coffee, great breakfast burrito. Usually once spring training like really gets into the swing of things, we show up very, very early for first clubhouse. You know, I'm talking like 7, 8 a.m. So I won't eat breakfast in the morning. I'll go there, hang around clubhouse, and then I'll run to Gringo's before workouts start on the field, which is usually later morning, early afternoon. So that's always a clutch spot for me. And then fancy spots, can't beat Burns Steakhouse. We got reservation pretty early on in spring training coming up, so I'm looking forward to that. We did it last year as well. Always a treat, pricey one at that, but great steaks, great dessert, great wine. Always try to get there once a spring.
Dude, I mean, I gotta step up my game, man. I don't know. I think we were just going to like wherever you could get like a sit down restaurant that was somewhat affordable. I want to try Los Gringos. I think those on my walk. Like we where we stayed was close enough where I could walk to the backfields where the minor league guys were at, and I spent probably 60% of those days in the backfields versus going to actual spring games. Went to a couple early on, and then I just started going to the backfields. I passed by the Los Gringos spot. I'll stop by there.
It's a good spot. Good spot. Friendly people, good coffee. Like I said, good burrito. Trying to think of other places that I frequent during spring training. Columbia Restaurant is a great one. Cigar City Brewing is great. There's a karaoke bar in Ybor that me and Chris and, you know, a couple of other guys, Cuddy, we always hang out at. So it's weird. Yeah, we're there so much now. It's become so familiar that we've all got our spots. And then on top of that, you know, we always like to try new places as well. There's a Peruvian place that I love. So looking forward to all that.
I gotta try some of the Spanish spots in there, especially coffee. My coffee situation last year, we had like a, there was a coffee machine in the place we stayed, so we were able to just kind of like, you know, get the K cups, put them in, and rock from there. But like when you're out on the road, you're not bringing a K cup with you, you're not bringing a machine with you. So to get a coffee spot.
If you or anybody listening who's going to be in spring training likes Cuban food, La Terracita is right next to the Himes complex, and then Havana 86 is also like 5 minutes away. Both fantastic spots. I eat a ton of Cuban food when I'm in spring training. Where I live here in Rockin County, New York, we don't have a lot of Cuban spots nearby, so I go double time on the Cuban food down in Tampa.
I am not joking. I've bookmarked every single place you just mentioned on my Google tabs because I'm a coffee fanatic. I'm a big caffeine guy. I have to kick the energy drinks, so I let coffee kind of be my vice. And I need a good coffee. I love Cuban coffee. There, as you mentioned, not that, you know, New York doesn't have any Cuban population or anything of the sort. It's just there's not as much. There's not as many Cuban spots. I live on Long Island now. There's even fewer Cuban spots I could go to get Cuban coffee. So I need to keep that index alive and get a little more familiar. Last year was my first time in Tampa, so I've never been beforehand.
A lot of great spots. Tampa is especially like the area around GMS and Himes, which like isn't necessarily like a big built up city area. Like great food spot. It's great, great food city.
Yeah, I have to explore it a little more. I'm excited to just go and have warm weather. It's so cold, man. Like I can't do it. I really can't. I think I've gotten to the point where last week I was like, hey, you know what? I don't even hate cold weather that much. And no, I do. I think I do. I think I'm just sick of it at this point.
I can't stand this weather.
I think the reason I wasn't so against it was I spent most of January not having to go to school because we were on break. Now that I do have to go to school and my Honda sounds like it's going to explode every time I try and turn it on in this weather, like that. Yeah, no, I definitely still hate it. Definitely hate it. I apologize to all the cold haters and the summer fanatics for the slander I give during the summer. You were right. It is a better time of year than this time of year. Totally 100% correct.
It's been a tough winter. That's for sure.
Yes. Lots of snow, lots of wind, lots of cold weather. Gary, any final thoughts you've got before we wrap things up here?
No, I think that about covers it. Other than, again, like thank you to everybody who has listened to these first two episodes or watched, you know, whatever your preferred medium is. Looking forward to getting down to spring training and getting you guys some insight from there and some observations from camp. Hopefully get a guest or two on rather soon, get our first one. So, yeah, really just looking forward to keeping up with this podcast and getting down to camp.
Yeah, and again, for all those listening here, you can check out Gary on Twitter at Gary H. Phillips. Furthermore, the New York Daily News profile, where it has all of his articles, there will be linked in the description, and the two articles he did on the non-roster invites and the bench bat situation. That article, I believe, already included that and Duhar wasn't like an option. Yep. So it's not like it's particularly like it didn't like age poorly in the span of 24 to 48 hours, which that's just good reporting right there. That's the name of the game. And all that work will be linked in the description. And I also want to second again, just thank you guys so much for tuning in. You guys have been awesome with the support. We're really excited for the upcoming year. Excited to have all of the fun spring training conversations where, or I guess some pretty dark ones as well. Cause the injury bug is unfortunate, unavoidable situation, but it'll still be interesting to talk about. And you can get that all here on Fireside Yankees audio, video. If you guys are listening to this on audio, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star rating. And if you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. We'll see you guys in the next one. Have a great rest of your day and peace out, everybody. Perfect.